productivity. And I would argue that freedom from hunger and freedom from some level maladaptive income issues is really a requirement for people to become productive. In the modern world in particular, there's more and more emphasis on human capital development, our ability to function well mentally in ways that allow us to move forward. Without some level of freedom from hunger and some level of basic income provision, people really don't have a chance in that respect. In particular, there's an old adage that you can't learn on an empty stomach. And I would say you can't learn very well on a half-empty stomach. I've seen it as a teacher for many years. And I think we really have to make sure that people have basic levels of provision in these areas if we want them to be productive. The third area is more selfish and self-interested, and basically the argument is we all suffer when we don't provide for people. We may not suffer in immediate and direct ways, but ultimately we suffer when people who are poor and not well-fed incur higher levels of health problems. We end up paying them. We're seeing this somewhat in our health debates going on right now. We also suffer when people act from distress, commit crimes and other acts that really undercut our social order. So I would argue that for all of these three reasons, myself and most of the people here, I would guess, think that this is an important area to devote at least a good part of our attention to. The second issue is, why does hunger exist in central Illinois? And for the most part, I want to defer to the local experts here on this topic, because I don't really consider myself to be a local expert. I think Amy's done a nice job of pointing to some of the broad trends, and I would like to highlight a few of those from a national perspective, because I think that Eastern Illinois now is a microcosm of a lot of what's going on nationally and across Illinois. And again, let me make three very brief points in this way. In my view, hunger problems are primarily due to lack of resources and lack of assets. And both of these trends, income and assets, are going up across the country, not just in Eastern Illinois, but everywhere. Furthermore, they were going up before this latest economic crisis happened. So I think that this crisis will go down, but these trends are more deeply entrenched and are going to continue. So this isn't going to go away. Second point is, obviously, the recent economic crisis has deepened these problems at serious levels. And so I don't want to diminish that in any sense. In particular, this economic crisis is kind of at least a triple whammy, and maybe people will come up with a fourth or fifth whammy before we're done. But, I mean, you have the problem of increasing unemployment and also underemployment. Sometimes we don't talk about underemployment, but it's probably double what the unemployment rate would be. The second one is people lost assets big time in this crisis, as many of you know, particularly housing assets. And so the issue that Amy brought up with respect to asset problems has become more acute. And then finally, healthcare costs are pretty much going through the roof. So people need more of their disposable income to take care of that set of problems. And finally, the social safety net, which we usually turn to during times like this, has been diminished over the last 10 or 15 years. There is a lot of attention to welfare reform in the mid-1990s, and many claims that this was a great success. But welfare reforms didn't produce stable jobs for people, and they didn't produce high-paying jobs for people. So now we have large numbers of people who don't have access to social supports that they may have had in the past, and more people who have become working poor, partially as a result of the policy changes that we made. So I think these factors taken together have created a lot more pressure on low-income people, and unfortunately, hunger is a consequence of that.
Thank you, Professor Anderson. Donna Camp is the director and a co-founder of the Wesley Evening Food Pantry. Ms. Camp left Champaign-Urbana in 1985 to serve as a Peace Corps volunteer in the Caribbean, where her neighbors had no electricity, but the social structure allowed no one to go hungry. Since that time, she has led national projects that provided low-income taxpayers with free electric filing, publicized 20 years of Head Start research, developed software for the Centers for Disease Control, and worked with neighborhoods to conduct participatory community needs assessments. She has also personally encountered hardships that many people living in poverty experience. Ms. Camp, good to have you here this evening. Look forward to your opening remarks.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you all for inviting me to be here. The answer to Dave's first question of why am I here is actually very simple. I don't think anyone should ever have to be hungry, and I myself can do something about it, so that's why I'm here. I believe hunger exists in Eastern Illinois because there are a finite amount of resources in the world, whether that's food or housing or wages. And for people who are working at minimum wage jobs or have low income or are in poverty, our society does not provide safety nets. The distribution of resources is very unequal. I think Amy's slide talking about how the median income is actually getting worse instead of better just shows how resources are not equitably distributed. And so for people who are living in that situation, any small event, negative event that happens in their lives, impacts their ability to have food, whether that's somebody's sick and can't work, and they don't have sick leave to cover that time, whether it's a lack of health care or insurance, or an elderly parent moves in with them, and now they're feeding one extra person. I could give many, many stories, but that's the basic reason that I'm here and why I think hunger is a problem.
Senator Michael Frerich's values were shaped in the East Central Illinois farming community of Guilford, where he was born and raised. Upon graduating from Yale, Mike studied Chinese and taught English in Taiwan. Senator Frerich successfully sponsored the bill to reduce poverty, which passed in May of 2008. As a result, the Commission on the Elimination of Poverty was created, which aims to reduce local poverty by at least 50% by 2015. The commission investigates effects that poverty has on a community, such as changes in education, health, nutrition, and housing. A report developed by the commission is due to be released in 2010. Senator Frerich currently resides in Champaign, Illinois, with his wife, Laura, and their daughter, Ella Grace. Senator Frerich, thank you for taking the time to join us this evening. We look forward to your government viewpoint.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here. I do have to speak a little bit on behalf of my colleague, Representative Jacobson. For those of you who don't know, today is her birthday. So the fact that she showed up here at all, I know her husband wanted to take her out for dinner, but in my conversation with her, she said, I want to be here. I can't stay the whole time. My husband insists that I go eat dinner with him at a reasonable hour. She's been a great person to work with in the General Assembly on poverty issues. And so to answer the question, why are you invested in addressing hunger and poverty, I think my answers would not be too dissimilar than the other panelists. I think they were spoken much more eloquently by Jim Hires. I guess the more interesting question is, well, why am I here this evening? And I'm here because I believe that state government has a role to play in reducing poverty. That's why I was very proud to be the sponsor of the bill that created the Commission for the Elimination of Poverty. Even though it was passed in 2008, it has been very slow to get established. There were lots of commissions that were waiting to be filled by our previous governor. For various reasons, he was not filling them. And then when we had a new governor, it has taken a while to get around to getting this going, but we're hopeful that we will meet soon, often, and produce a report with some tangible ideas for reducing poverty by 50% by 2015. It's something I very much want to take part in. Why do we believe the reasons for hunger exist in eastern Illinois? I guess I would say sort of similar vein. You looked on those slides presented earlier, and Champaign and Vermilion counties happen to be the two counties I represent. And that's another reason why I'm really interested in being here this evening is because my district, it is a big issue. And there are a lot of people around the state who think that poverty is an issue in Chicago, or specifically maybe the south side of Chicago. But it is a problem throughout the state of Illinois. And, you know, I think our reasons for hunger are not too dissimilar from this region versus others. It has to do with opportunities for employment. But often a lot of those problems fall on children who don't have the means to do something about that. But I did want to talk about reasons for hunger. It's not just hunger, but I think there's nutritional poverty out there as well. Last year, when I was asked to participate in the $25 a week challenge, people said, well, how are you going to survive on $25 a week? You're a big guy. You need a lot of calories. And I found that purchasing the calories wasn't a real problem, but getting nutrition in that diet on $25 a week was so very difficult because of the high costs of fresh fruit and vegetables and other nutritional needs. And that's something I think we also need to be discussing here this evening.
Jennifer Racina joined the Shriver Center in September of 2008 for a two-year fellowship program. Her project focuses on the implementation of the new Temporary Assistance for Needy Families rules in Illinois and assisting clients in accessing the public benefits. She graduated from Northwestern University School of Law, where she was active in the Public Interest Group and the Journal of Law and Social Policy. She also interned with the Legal Assistance Foundation of Metropolitan Chicago and Cabrini-Green Legal Aid and volunteered with the Center for Disability and Elder Law and Tax Assistance Programs. Before law school, she worked in a psychiatric hospital and as a food stamps caseworker in Durham, North Carolina. And we definitely look forward to your opening statements this evening. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the invitation to be here, and I'm glad to be here down in Champaign. I really can't say anything much different than the previous speakers as far as why I'm here. I believe that hunger is a fundamental right that everyone is entitled to, and the poor are often blamed for the choices they've made that led them to be poor. And I believe that many people did not make choices. They're a victim of their circumstances. And even those who made the choices, I believe hunger is far too severe of a consequence. Even if you're addicted to drugs or the worst things that you do, I've asked people, how bad do you have to make a mistake in order to be, you know, expected to go hungry? That just doesn't jive with how I believe. And as far as the hunger existing in Illinois, I believe there is a safety net that is supposed to take care of this issue. There's food stamps, there's welfare. There are programs out there that the government has provided, which needs to be provided. However, it is severely failing right now, and that's something that we work very hard at the Shriver Center to try to address.
Thank you very much. Lynn Jones is the president and CEO of the United Way of Champaign County. Her volunteer activities include past presidencies of the Executive Club of Champaign County and the Champaign County Literacy Council, member of Champaign West Rotary, and serving on the Rotary Charities Committee. She is also a past board member of Crisis Nursery and the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. In 2001, Lynn's outstanding leadership earned her an Athena Award from the Champaign County Chamber of Commerce. As CEO of the United Way, Lynn worked with the Eastern Illinois Food Bank on a comprehensive project to alleviate local hunger. Ms. Jones, I look forward to what you have to say as you are one on the ground dealing with hunger issues on a daily basis.
Why am I here? Why am I involved? I think perhaps it started when I was really young. I am a product of 12 years of Catholic school, and I am actually grateful that the good sisters taught us how important it was to be concerned about those less fortunate. And while often the focus was overseas, the issue of hunger was something that we dealt with early on. I learned more, certainly, when I had the opportunity to be on the board of the food bank, and was delighted when I got to United Way to find that the Alleviate Hunger Project had already started. And I think, and we talked about this last year, I won't belabor it, but I think perhaps while the issue is still significant, the Alleviate Hunger Project has made our attempts to address the problem more effective. And so we're certainly happy to have had the opportunity to be involved in that. A couple of weeks ago, United Way had their campaign kickoff, and we did something a little different this year. We had a poverty simulation experience. And we learned a lot, but the one most striking piece of information that we found was that not one of the families that were participating in a month-long simulation, which was each week was 15 minutes, and families were given a certain amount of money, they were given a certain amount of bills, they perhaps had loans, and they had to go to the grocer to get food. And the reality is that none of the families in this poverty experience had the resources to get enough food to feed their families. And as I walked around the room, and the participants were very serious about trying to have this experience and feel what it might be to live at that poverty level, the frustration that seemed to most permeate the room was that of parents unable to provide for their children. And I think probably personally what is most motivating about addressing this issue is knowing how many children in our county are affected by hunger. And you know, all of us, many of us are parents. You think about how would it feel if you were unable to feed your children, and you really begin to appreciate the frustration that these families right here in our community feel when they're unable to do that. So that's why I'm here.
Thank you very much. Appreciate those opening remarks. Kate Mayer has been executive director of the Greater Chicago Food Depository since 2006. The Greater Chicago Food Depository is the food bank that serves Chicago and Cook County. Celebrating its 30th year, the food depository distributes more than 50 million pounds of food annually and offers an array of award-winning programs that address hunger's root causes. Kate serves as the president of Feeding Illinois, the coalition of all 8 Feeding America food banks that serve the entire state of Illinois. Kate has been named one of Chicago's 40 Under 40 by Crain's Chicago Business and a Leadership Greater Chicago Fellow. Kate holds a bachelor's degree from McAllister College and a master's degree in public policy and administration from the University of Wisconsin. Kate and her husband, Sam, have 2 young sons, and we appreciate you coming down from Chicago and speaking on a statewide view of all of the food banks that you deal with.
Well, thank you, Dave. So you've just alluded to the fact I came down from Chicago. I actually have 3 very good reasons to be here tonight. The first is that Jim Hires asked me, and for those of you who don't know, he's incredibly persuasive. So watch out when you see him coming asking for food or money or for you to volunteer, because you can't say no to Jim. The second reason is I'm actually a native of Urbana, and it gave me a chance to see my brother and my nieces. And so my niece Sylvia is in the audience tonight and is probably the youngest anti-hunger activist among us this evening. So I'm delighted to have the chance. But the third reason that I'm here this evening, like many of the speakers have alluded to, from where I stand, food, access to food is a fundamental human right. And this morning, I woke up, and I got ready for work, and I got my kids ready for school, and we went down into the kitchen, and they got to choose what breakfast they wanted and have seconds, and I got them out the door, and then I went to work. And somewhere in my community, perhaps on the very block that I live, there was another mother who was also getting her children ready for school. Except when they came into the kitchen, she had to make the choice of not having breakfast herself because it was the end of the month and the food stamps had run out, and having to make the difficult decision of how to pare down the school lunches, because one of the realities in the community that I live, in the city of Chicago, we do not have universal school breakfast. Access to breakfast at school and to lunch isn't something that every child in this state has. And it's a sad, sad fact to reveal to all of you that Illinois actually ranks, I believe it's 51st in school breakfast participation. And so for me, whether it's the city of Chicago or the state of Illinois, there are far too many people who wake up and are faced with difficult choices of how to get through the day. That's the really humbling reality. The great news is that there are amazing organizations like the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. There are 8 food banks that serve the state of Illinois, and every day we make it to happen for this state. Eastern Illinois distributed more than 5 million pounds of food, close to 6 million pounds of food, to make sure that plenty of people had access, not just to food, but quality, nutritious food, addressing Senator Frerich's point. Why does hunger exist? Hunger is a symptom of poverty. There is absoluting, just suffocating poverty in this community. It is not just on the south side of Chicago. That was one of the biggest surprises for me when I became the head of Feeding Illinois and started coming down to Springfield more often, and I would talk to people and they would say, that's just your problem. And the sad fact, as Senator Frerich knows, is that hunger is indeed in every neighborhood in the city of Chicago, but it is in every one of Illinois' 102 counties, and it is in every state in this country. And it is because we have massive poverty. And the solution, in part, is talking about it, which is why I am so delighted to be here this evening.
Thank you very much for those opening comments. Amy Terpstra, you already met a little bit. She's a data analyst and writer with expertise in Census Bureau, Economic Health and Human Services data collection, interpretation, and communication. Mrs. Terpstra's work focuses on poverty, income, and housing-related issues, and her analysis have informed the work of thousands of service providers, local and county governments, coalitions, and policymakers throughout Illinois and the Midwest. She conducts research for and jointly authors the Social Impact Research Center's annual reports on Illinois and Chicago region poverty. And she also keeps large databases that track state, county, and local data for multiple indicators of poverty. Ms. Terpstra, one more chance, and then we will go ahead and move on into our moderated questions.
Thank you. I would echo the stuff that my fellow panelists have articulated about the values that drive them in their work. But I will just say that I've been reflecting a lot lately on kind of what an interesting moment this is to have a discussion about poverty and hunger. One of the themes that I'm sure you've been reading in the paper and hearing constantly is the, you know, rise of people who never before were poor, people who were middle class falling into poverty and now needing assistance, now walking through the doors of the food pantries, walking going into homeless shelters and needing assistance. And so I think that there's this moment that we have people's attention a little bit more. People are listening. People feel more vulnerable and can kind of begin to understand a little bit more what we mean when we're talking about poverty and hardship. And I don't want to diminish that at all or diminish people's feelings of vulnerability or the actual hardship that they're experiencing, people who, you know, once were not poor. But I do this work and I'm invested in this work because there was 1.5 million people in the state who were poor before the recession ever started. And for them, there has been a perpetual recession for many, many years. The number of people who are poor in the state of Illinois has been growing over the course of this decade, in good times and in bad times. And so I think, you know, when we're talking about why hunger exists, you know, everyone's been saying it, hunger exists, and Jim says this all the time because it's a symptom of poverty. And if we want to be talking about, you know, why poverty exists, we need to be looking at the jobs that we have available in our communities. We need to be looking at, are those good jobs? Do they afford people a chance to support their families? Do they offer benefits? Do they help people move up and get ahead in life? And then, you know, we had some folks talking about the broken safety net, people falling through the cracks. Like I said, half of people who are in extreme poverty are seniors, children, or people with disabilities. And that right there, that points to the fact that something's not working and that we are not supporting people in the way that we should be supporting them. One of the most startling statistics to me every time I surprise myself when I crunch these numbers, even though I know what's coming, is when I look at the number of people who are poor that are working full-time year-round. 90,000 people in the state work full-time year-round but still are poor, below those extremely low poverty thresholds that I shared with you earlier. And that right there is just an absolute affront to our American values that, you know, if we're the land of opportunity, we say that you work hard, you will get ahead. 90,000 people are poor, despite the fact that they're putting forth maximum work effort. I feel like we can do better, and I think that we should hold our country and our state to a higher standard. That's why I do this work.
Well, we've reached the point where we'll have some moderated questions. And panel, I want this to be a conversation. We have the synergy of all seven of you in the room at this time. And so when I ask a question, I ask that you not only perhaps respond to that, but you take the opportunity to respond to each other. And with that, let's get started. The issue of hunger is actually two-pronged. There is the hunger that is ongoing that we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, using charity primarily, emergency-style hunger, and taking care of it in an emergency-style way. There is also the longer-term problem of dealing with hunger, which will require a more systematic approach and perhaps unique new partnerships between government and the individuals and organizations to combat the underlying systematic issues that go with poverty and hunger. We'll spend some time on the short term and then some time looking at systematic long-term issues. Current external circumstances, the recession was certainly mentioned more than once, are contributing to a spike in those who are food insecure. Those who are running out of food or not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or who are relying on reductions in food or emergency food services to get by. And by all accounts, the year 2010 could see double-digit unemployment, and job creation is expected to lag far behind a Wall Street resurgence. So panelists, what are the practical, tangible, day-to-day solutions that are being implemented right now? And secondly, how can we potentially build on them?
I'll take that one.
Go ahead, Donna.
I think I can speak for our food pantry, and I think it's happening in similar ways in other food pantries around the community. Our pantry has seen a 400% increase in the need in the last year, and we have completely redesigned how we do business in order to make sure that everyone who comes gets food. So for us, the day-to-day solutions are completely rethinking who are we serving, how do we make sure everyone who comes gets food, involving people as much as possible. We involve clients. We talk to them about what time do we need to be open, what kind of food should we have there, and I think all of us serve different types of clients, but in the last year, we've talked to people who want more things they can cook and less, I guess, less complete meals maybe. How can they stretch? If they only get a grocery sack full, how can that be the most nutritious food possible and stretch it as far as possible? The other part of that, of what do we do in the future, is, for us at least, is how do we afford to stay in business? And how can we either find, 12 partners that can give us a lot of money, or how can we find 1,000 people to each give us $100? And that is, I think, the greatest challenge that we're facing right now.
Kate.
At a statewide level, I think that there's sort of two sort of fundamental tracks that the food banks in the state are looking at. The first is a program that Eastern Illinois Food Bank has that we are trying to replicate statewide, is a mobile pantry. So not every community across the state is fortunate enough to have a pantry as strong as the one that you just heard referred to. And so we have a lot of communities where there isn't a food pantry, or the food pantry can only be open once a month, and that's clearly not enough to meet demand. So looking at a way that we can bring mobile pantries, literally trucks that have boxes of food and fresh produce, into communities where there has either been a dramatic and sudden change in the need for food. So perhaps there's been a weather-related emergency, or there has been a plant closing, and that community can't mount the sort of response that it needs. And so the food banks in the state are working together to acquire a mobile pantry, and working with our friends in the General Assembly to make sure that that's a resource that Illinois will have in the years to come. The other thing, which I think is a really important tool for all of us, the food banks in the state during the past year became official partners with the Illinois Department of Human Services on a program known as SNAP Outreach, formerly known as the Food Stamp Program. And that's a really important tool. Only 76% of the people eligible in the state of Illinois are getting food stamps. There are a number of barriers that make it difficult for people to get food stamps. And what's really exciting is that food banks and our food pantry partners are in a unique position to be able to help clients access food stamps, or SNAP, as they're now known, the link card, so that people can ultimately go into a grocery store and select food and stretch their budgets even further.
Senator Frerichs?
Well, since I heard the General Assembly mentioned, I thought I would chime in. I think in the short run, really what's required are resources, namely money. I think that rather than the state reduplicating some sort of work that other agencies are doing, working through organizations like Illinois Food Bank is a very efficient, effective way of using our dollars. The problem with the state right now is there just aren't very many dollars. I think the longer-term solution for that is new revenue for the state and using it more wisely. Now, it doesn't make much sense if you raise taxes on people who are working poor to give them more money. I think ultimately in the long run, what the state of Illinois needs to work on is a progressive tax structure for the state of Illinois, and one that doesn't hurt the working poor. There's some things we can do right now. For those of you who don't know, we're prohibited by our state constitution from having graduated tax rates. We can increase our earned income tax credit. That's something we passed out of the Senate, haven't been able to do in the House for a little while. But I ultimately like to move towards progressive income tax structure. I think that's something that it seems very radical. We've only had it at the federal level for the last 96 years, so it's not quite been tested enough. I didn't realize how radical of a suggestion it was until I actually sponsored a bill to put it on the ballot to allow the public to decide. I didn't think this was pushing too much, letting the voters have a choice, and I withstood over an hour's worth of questions from the opposition talking about how this was just a too radical idea, too risky for the state of Illinois. I intend to reintroduce it next year.
we go to Jennifer.
Well, I think both the short-term and the long-term solution is very much in the SNAP program, although I'm just going to call it food stamps. I'm trying, but it just is food stamps. And the beauty of that is where Donna is struggling to find funding for her program, SNAP is extremely well-funded at the federal level, and that takes all the pressure off Senator Frerichs as far as trying to find the money to fund it, because it is there and it has seen a tremendous increase in Illinois in the past year. Statewide, the food stamp rolls have gone up over 17%. Now, the problem there is that the number of caseworkers in the state have decreased. Okay, so when I was a food stamp caseworker before law school, I was moving when I had 400 cases. I thought it was fun. I was young and ambitious. I thought, this is crazy. This is great. Some local offices now, their caseloads are over 2,000. So it is completely unmanageable there. And looking at this region specifically, I know the Eastern Illinois Food Bank serves 14 counties. Well, those 14 counties right now are dealing with 9 local offices. There have been 5 office consolidations, which is a polite way of saying office closings. And I know that some individuals now are, I believe, 60 miles from the closest local office. And while Illinois has made progress in having an online application system, federal regulations require a face-to-face interview for food stamps. So those individuals, in addition to dealing with all the other challenges in their lives, have to find a way to get to that local office. And unfortunately, because unlike Donna's program that's responding to clients' needs and being dynamic, no offense, Senator, but the state government does not work like that. So people, you know, even mailing or faxing in documents often isn't enough. So clients have to drive for their face-to-face interview, then have to travel yet again to turn in documents to deal with problems. Try calling a caseworker in this state. Nobody answers, and their mailbox is full. There is just no way to get in touch with somebody. And we're talking about food stamps. We're talking about food, a fundamental issue. So that's not something that can wait 30 days to go through the bureaucracy. When your kids are hungry, that's something that needs to be addressed immediately. So that program is there, it just needs to be accessed better. In this region, I know that this is about year-old data, but 37% of individuals in poverty are accessing food stamps in this 14-county region, whereas statewide, the average is closer to 50%. So there's really tremendous underutilization, and this data, I believe, is before the office closings. So you're just looking at people having difficulty accessing this fundamental issue, and it can address both short-term and long-term. If you qualify for expedited food stamps, you can get your benefits processed within 5 days. And even if you don't, the time limit is 30 days. And there is, unlike welfare and like cash assistance, there is no time limit on the receipt of food stamps. It is meant to be a fundamental support that many working families utilize. The income guidelines are actually higher than the poverty level. So it's a supplement for all those people who are working full-time year-round and still unable to make ends meet. Increasingly accessing this benefit, and I know it is a tremendous cause of President Obama, and he was on food stamps himself when he was younger. So I think this is something that really Illinois needs to make better use of. The Food Research and Action Council recently released data that I believe Cook County alone left $100 million on the table, because another benefit of food stamps is there's a tremendous stimulative effect. Even conservative economists have said that for every dollar in food stamps given to a low-income family, there's about $1.73 in stimulative effect on the economy. Part of the problem with tax rebates is people are conservative. They save it for that rainy day like we're taught to do. But you want to get money into the economy, give a family with no food, no income money, they're going to spend it immediately. So it's really something that all around the state needs to do a better job of utilizing and helping families to access.
So Jennifer has laid out the SNAP problems very well. Caseworkers are overworked. The system is difficult for many to access due to transportation issues. Hard to find this 25-ish percent of people that are in need. So, panelists, with all your brain power, how do we fix it?
Let me just, I want to sort of add something to what Jennifer said, which was, I think, in all due respect, Senator Frerichs, I should say, is really one of the strongest supporters the food banks in the state of Illinois have, and he has been a great friend to the work that we do. I'm going to be a little playful and say I'm not letting him off the hook. Jennifer's right that the funding for the SNAP program is federal funding that gets left in Washington, D.C. if people aren't able to access their benefits. But there's still a tremendous amount of investment that we need to do at a state level. I'll start with the fact that. I'll put a challenge out to all of you, and maybe this is something that the Eastern Illinois Food Bank can assist with. Try to fill out a food stamp application. It's 11 pages long. It's complicated. If you have any sort of problems with vision, you will find it very difficult to read because the type is incredibly small. If you are new to the English language or your literacy rate is not particularly high, you will struggle with understanding what many of the words mean. You may not know off the top of your head what your gross monthly income is. You may not think in those terms. It is complicated to apply for something that the federal law says you are entitled to. So we have administrative barriers that I think we can probably do a much better job at before we even get to the issue of where you go to apply and when you go and apply. And I should stop because I could probably talk for 5 hours, particularly related to the city of Chicago on that topic, so I won't go there. But
does anybody else want to take a shot at this issue? Professor Anderson.
I think this is a small-scale solution, but I know including in Chicago, there's been a lot of work in the past in terms of community efforts just to help with access, and perhaps someone was alluding to a new one in Illinois. But access doesn't occur partially for bureaucratic reasons. It also just doesn't occur because of lack of knowledge about things. And there's tax counseling organizations that have built up in Chicago, for example, to help people access their earned income tax credit, and you've seen levels of participation go up quite a bit as a result. So I think there is some possibility of community efforts that just help on the access side, and perhaps accompanied by advocacy for form simplification and help with working with the bureaucracy, some at least marginal improvements could be made in people getting what they're entitled to.
And Kate?
There's actually an incredible pilot happening right now called Express SNAP. It started in the collar counties around Chicago, and it's just been extended to Cook County, where waivers have been obtained so that the food banks, started with Northern Illinois Food Bank and now the Greater Chicago Food Depository, were actually able to sign people up in the food pantry and using a nifty little laptop computer with a wireless card, we're actually able to give them a link card on the spot. And I am part of the reason we're speeding back to Chicago is we have the top administrator from USDA coming out to observe the pilot, and we're hopeful that we can demonstrate that this is a very successful way to link people with the benefit immediately at a food pantry, which by definition they are going to because they need food.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
I agree that that's an excellent pilot program and that community organizations are doing incredible work to help people access SNAP and overcome the bureaucracy. No matter how simple the application is or how simple the rules, it's still, I mean, it's just not going to be simple, but it's going to be difficult for people to access. But the true, I think a huge part of it is the back end. Illinois got $12 million in stimulus funds to utilize for the food stamp program, and advocates had a debate. Should we use it to outreach, to get to those people who haven't accessed the program and help them get through it? But what we decided was we needed it on the back end because all the good food banks do in helping people do applications, going so far as to fill out the application and get into the Illinois system themselves. If no one's on the back end to process it, it's just not going to happen. And until we get tremendous advance in our technology or very big changes to what the policy is, we need bodies on the back end. Because again, people, even with express stamps, they only get a month and a half to 2 months of benefits. They still need to go in that local office. And right now, if they can even get an interview, they're waiting 6 hours. They're just sitting there and waiting for an interview that may or may not happen that day. And we need bodies in the office. That's, I think, what it really comes down to.
Since the year 2000, there has been virtually no change in the number of households in the U.S. who experience hunger and food insecurity, despite the federal government spending some $14 billion to $14.5 billion annually. Instead of addressing systematic underlying causes for hunger, and we heard about some of those this evening, including the need to provide affordable skills, affordable health care, child care, and affordable housing, to name just a few, we provide individual and institutional charity. And the result is that America has become a soup kitchen nation. How do we rip off the Band-Aid of short-term charity for a long-term solution? Senator Frerichs?
I think I would say that a big part of this is access to a job, to jobs, to good-paying jobs. It's very simple to say, how do you create those jobs? I think fundamentally we need to do a better job of educating the citizens of our state, of our country, providing them with skills. So one, they can access better-paying jobs, but I think a lot of these people with children in poverty may not just understand some of the issues of balancing checkbooks, what's proper nutrition for their children. And I think in Illinois, we have great disparities, great inequities between our school districts. I mean, we have separate and very unequal school districts throughout the state of Illinois, some of the greatest disparities of any state in the country. And I think that contributes to some of these poverty differentials. You have suburbs like Kenilworth in northern Illinois that are very, very affluent. I would say that's probably a neighborhood where there is not much poverty. I'd say probably very, very little, because I think, first of all, they couldn't afford to live there. There aren't many opportunities. But then you have other pockets throughout the state where they have to rely on largely on local property taxes, a fairly small state contribution towards their educational systems. And you get people trapped. And I think that addressing our educational system, at least from my perspective, is a good place to start for long-term solutions. Those aren't going to solve today's problems, but I think looking forward is where we need to put some effort.
Professor Anderson.
I don't think we can address this without getting back to what Senator Frerichs said earlier, some level of progressive taxation. I agree that there's a lot that can be done skill development-wise, but all the trends in the market are toward greater market inequality of results. And I don't think there's anything on the horizon that suggests that's going to change. And yet we seem to be timid as a society of saying we need to adjust those market outcomes with progressive taxation. And I think until we're willing to fight for that, and we don't seem to want to fight for anything that involves taxes, because I think as a society we're always worried about taxes. But I think if we don't fight for tax equity that leads to redistribution through the tax system, these results are just going to keep changing, because all the market forces are pushing toward more inequality. And, I commend the senator for being willing to take on that issue, because it's very hard for politicians to take on issues like that, even when they're really not taxing everyone. They're looking at distributional issues.
More than once this evening, I heard from the panel that food is a fundamental right. Everybody's nodding yes. So if it is indeed a fundamental right, then it's worth fighting for. And we've heard from Professor Anderson about one way we can fight for that fundamental right. Are there others? Donna?
I'm not sure if this is really a systematic change as much as a societal change. But I feel very deeply that if food is a fundamental human right, then each of us who have enough might have to actually give up something in order for other people to have some. And I almost didn't want to say it because it sounds very trite, but I do believe that with as much inequality as there is in society, it will take every person saying, I want our society to be more equal, to make a difference. That the progressive taxation is important, that systems are important, but the systems will only be successful if we all commit to them.
What can we do, long-term, structural? I guess my initial reaction is that there is a lot of education that needs to happen, because I'm not convinced that most people are convinced that poverty and hunger are structural issues. There's a lot of blame. People blame people who are poor for their own poverty, and people who are poor have internalized that blame and blame themselves for their own poverty and their own situation. So I think that there's even, along with many of the other solutions that that we're talking about, is just having events like this one and helping people see the larger mechanisms that are in play that literally hold some people in society back and hold them down. aside from the education piece, you know, we've been talking about programs that mitigate the very worst effects of poverty, and that, you know, some folks were talking about the things that help people get out of poverty, like education and, you know, job training programs. Then also, I think we need to talk about, you know, things that help people get ahead, not just get by, but get ahead. So things like, you know, building savings, financial literacy, other asset building approaches, you know, up until recently that might have, you know, included, and I think it still will in the future, home ownership and building equity in that way. So looking at longer term solutions to help people get ahead and then stay ahead for generations to come.
And Jennifer.
And as Amy said earlier, I think this is a tremendous opportunity. People are more aware that this could happen to anybody. You know, they're seeing friends and neighbors who were stable, working families, not their idea of poor, slipping into poverty, losing their homes and all that thing. So even though sometimes people are focusing more on the nouveau poor, I believe Barbara Ehrenreich called it, rather than the people who have always been poor, you know, we don't want to lose sight of that, but it also does present a tremendous opportunity. And also I believe that the short-term discussions that we talked about are very much part of the long-term solution. I know the Shriver Center's motto is taking action to end poverty, and people wonder, well, if you're getting people on welfare, if you're getting people on food stamps, is that really ending poverty? But how is a child supposed to learn and get ahead if they go to school hungry? How is a homeless individual supposed to find a job if they can't present themselves clean, well-dressed, with an address? So by taking care of those short-term needs, we can really facilitate families taking care of their own long-term needs and getting out of poverty.
Did I see another hand here? Go ahead, Lynn.
You know, I guess I look at this maybe on a smaller scale, but I think there's great frustration, probably particularly in the state of Illinois, about the difficulty of making any systematic change in the state. And perhaps part of the solution is, as a smaller community, I can't fix Cook County. You know, I think we need to take a look at our particular community here, Champaign, and say, what are those alliances that can be built or solidified?
Let's recognize the panel, please. Jim, the microphone's yours.
Thank you. My gratitude to this wonderful panel. When we started putting this thing together several months ago, we had a vision of what we were going to accomplish tonight. And I lean over to Cheryl. I think we hit a home run. Thank you. Thank you very much for what you've been able to bring to us. You know, this is not the end. It's not the beginning. We face this every day in food banking. But we are so optimistic. And I've defined it this year as the speed bumps have just gotten much, much bigger. But we've got over every one of them. A lot of creativity, a lot of support, and a lot of understanding of what it's going to take to move this thing forward in the future. I think that what we need to do across Illinois and across East Central Illinois is to take the resources that we have, maximize those, but never lose fact that if we can't eliminate poverty, if we can't change what East Central Illinois looks like, we will have this discussion over and over again. And we've taken steps in this state in several ways. One, thank you again, Senator Frerichs, for sponsoring that piece of legislation to create the Poverty Commission. But more importantly, by banding together through collaborative efforts, through state level, local levels, community levels, we can work together to make it happen. Thank you so very, very much. One bit of housekeeping. You were given a survey. We'd like for you to take an opportunity to fill that out because we are going to be planning these things in the future. Again, thanks to the panel. Thanks to WILL. And Dave, let's hear it for Dave Dickey, please. Thank you.
To listen to other stories of Illinois Public Media engaging the community on the economy, go to WillConnect.com.